Well, let's join the Grand Master of the Sovereign Order of Malta, Fra Matthew Festing, as he speaks to Emma McCarthy on the occasion of the launching of a series of seminars hosted by the International Relations Department of the American University of Rome this past Wednesday.
Speak to us a little bit about the health of this centuries-old order that has been such a vital part of the life of the Church.
Well, the reason I think we've survived is that we have had, over the centuries, a method of succeeding in changing all the time, reacting to circumstances, not only being reactive, but I suppose proactive too. Because any organisation which is going to last 50 years, never mind 900 years, has to change from time to time. And if you stay in a completely static way, of course, that simply doesn't happen because you get left behind by circumstances. So we try, whatever, you know, over the centuries, to react to the situations we find ourselves in. And so we are a complicated organisation because we're a religious order. We are an order of the Catholic Church, which is obviously that. Then we are a sovereign entity, which is another very odd aspect of it, unlike anybody else. And then, of course, we are now very much involved and have been actually always, but in a particular way now, very, very heavily involved in a lot of the developing countries around the world, where we have various programs to help people. And also, we react when there are various forms of natural disaster. So Haiti would be a particularly good example. But the tsunami and various earthquakes which have taken place over the years, we've also, for instance, we've got a small scheme going, helping to rebuild a school in Japan at this very moment. So that's what we're principally organised to do.
We must remind our listeners, of course, that it is a hospital order, so we're speaking also about care in the very basic sense of caring for those who are sick and who are in need. Recently, you said that you have come back from Africa. You spoke about the order's mission in the developing countries. You were in Kenya, you were in Congo. Thinking specifically of Kenya, which at the moment, along with Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia, is facing one of the worst famines in decades. Your order is very committed there, is it not?
Very much. And I think that's a place where we will be probably committed for many years to come. The whole of that area, southern Sudan is part of it, Kenya in particular. One of our problems, of course, is getting access to places where we don't have a base. So at the moment, of course, it's extremely difficult to work inside Somalia in any meaningful sense. And we have to be very careful that we don't run from crisis to crisis without having completed our work during the previous crisis, if you see what I mean. So at the moment, we're very much concentrating on the northeast Kenya situation, which of course is exactly the same as Somalia, but that is actually where we are rather than over the border in Somalia. But then we have a strong organization based in Nairobi, which is able to work, as I say, first in Kenya, then also in southern Sudan, and then also Uganda, and then in the left-handed way, because of course Congo is such an enormous country. Although it's a country which you think of as being a West African country, of course, it stretches the whole way to the middle of Africa and beyond. So a lot of what we do in the eastern part of the Congo is actually run, as it were, from an easterly direction rather than a westerly direction. So it's the whole of that area.
But what do you do?
Well, we do different things in different places. At a very basic level, we spend a lot of time feeding people. When we're not feeding people, we provide things like tents and blankets and those sort of things, as well as basic medical care. And then, of course, in some places, we have things that are, I suppose you would call them social programs as well as medical programs, if you like. And so it's a mixture. It's a complicated mixture. One of the difficulties, of course, we have is that in an ideal world, everything you do would be based on need, whereas, of course, the reality is that sometimes there isn't money or logistic support available in a particular place. So some of it is based not on need, but on where money is available. And I'm very conscious, as all the aid organisations are, that some places that we work successfully may be next to somewhere where there's a greater need. But if you just can't get in there for one reason or another, or nobody will, as it were, produce the funding for it, well, then, of course, it's much more difficult. I mean, I think in summary, you could say we could be working in Central Africa, West, East, forever. I mean, it's a huge problems there. Absolutely enormous problems, not just health problems, social problems, even the most basic things like clean water, very little of it. And one of the things that, of course, is there's a great shortage of around the world is efficient water technicians. You know, here, you know, we're used to going to the bathroom, turning on the tap and water comes out. You know, in Africa, if you want some water, you've got to trek, you know, 50 kilometres to get it in your tin can. I mean, that's horrific, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, looking at this order, which, you know, only time anyone speaks of the Order of Malta, immediately the images that come to mind are of the knights on that island or on their galleons floating around the Mediterranean. In the third millennium, it's a very different type of order, and you have a very different type of people who are part of that order. How do you go about attracting young people also to join
that? That's another very interesting thing. In a funny way, I don't think that I mean, we can't get on the magic carpet, we can't get in a time machine and go and see the people who were part of the organisation 800 years ago. But I don't think human nature changes. And one of the things to remember is that when the order was originally in the Holy Land, at the very beginning, they weren't soldiers, they weren't sailors, they didn't own galleons. They were professional soldiers, I suppose, probably by training, but they were inspired to go to the Holy Land. When they got there, they found somebody looking after pilgrims, looking after the sick, and that's what they were inspired to do. So from the very, very beginning, that's what we were doing. And there's even, the scholars will tell you, that a lot of our military, the very beginning this is, a lot of our military operations were conducted by mercenaries employed by us, but not necessarily actually ourselves. Then, of course, later on it changed because circumstances were different. The Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem collapsed. We then went to Cyprus. We then went to Rhodes and ended up in Malta. But wherever we went, wherever we've been, the very first action of the order has been to start a hospital. And they were in a very interesting position because, of course, they were in the Middle East and a great deal of medieval medicine was based on Arab scholarship. So, of course, a lot of our techniques at the very beginning were learnt from the Arabs. And we continue up to this day. And it's obviously, it's at some moments, we've been more involved possibly perhaps on the naval, particularly during the sort of 16th and 17th centuries, because we happened to have this strategic place in the middle of the Mediterranean, and because there was a huge, as it were, problem dealing. People are inclined to think, of course, that it was all to do with fighting the Turks, but of course it wasn't. It was a whole business of policing the Mediterranean, and an enormous amount of effort was spent in dealing with the Barbary corsairs, who sailed the most extraordinary distances and collected locals from the coastal areas of Italy, Spain, even, and lots of people are unaware of it, they even sailed right through up into the Atlantic and raided the southern coasts of Britain and took people off into slavery. So there was a huge, huge problem all those centuries ago, which we helped to, I don't know whether we helped to solve it, but we certainly took a great deal of part in it.
And now just very briefly, the last question. Looking ahead into this third millennium, what are the main challenges for this historic and unique order?
Well, I think the answer is it's difficult to say. Circumstances change. I mean, currently, my own view is the biggest challenge is what on earth we do about the situation in Africa. That is currently the biggest challenge. But, of course, there are also challenges in the Far East, South America. We were talking earlier about the business of the challenges even in great big rich countries like America. A lot of people who fall through the, as it were, the gaps in healthcare, because the situation or the system there is that you have to have private health insurance. If there are those people who can't have it because they can't pay for it, and therefore we spend a certain amount of time, in a limited way, because of course it's such a vast place, in trying to look after those people. So there are challenges all over the world. One of the other great big challenges is that everybody now lives longer. So you have in every country, not just the developing countries, but the Western countries too, you have this burgeoning population of elderly people. And some places look after the elderly very well, other places don't. My own country happens to specialise in looking after the elderly. That's what they do. It just depends. A lot of it is to do with reacting to what we find in certain places.
An order that changes as the times change, but remains very much true to its founding principle.
Well, that's what we try to do. And, of course, there are dilemmas in that. There's no doubt about the fact that you have to balance living with your history and your traditions you have to balance that with, as I say, being part of the modern world. You know, over the centuries, organizations, religious orders, whatever they might be, those that have not been prepared to change, have not been been prepared to react to changing circumstances, have fallen by the wayside, and there are dozens of them. You know, 500, 600 years ago, there were several other religious orders of the Church, these chivalric orders, the Templars, the Holy Sepulchre, and most of them died out, and some, like the Holy Sepulchre, were refounded. But we are the only one which, by luck, probably, really, rather than intelligence, I don't know, more by good luck than good management, as they say, I don't know, we are the only one which has actually survived all these centuries. So, you know, we all do our best to try and continue in that line.
You were listening there to Emma McCarthy interviewing the Grand Master of the Sovereign Order of Malta, Fra Matthew Festing.